Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome to Spoken Heard. My name is Susan W. Chase, and today I am thrilled to bring you New Mexico poet Zach Kluckman. How are you, Zach?
I am just wonderful. Thank you so much, Good. Susan. I'm really looking forward to talking with you today.
Do you prefer to be called Zachary? I've heard it said both ways, and I just naturally fall into the short form, but do you prefer to be Zachary Kluckman?
You know, it's funny. I'm glad you asked. I actually just go by Zach. I only use Zachary when I'm performing. It's my easy way to have a stage name. I just use the name my mom called me when I'm in trouble. Yeah. Exactly.
Well, that's interesting that you cut the formal then for the important times in your life, whether it's getting in trouble or getting something really important done. So I know you've been working on just a ton of projects lately, and I'm going to let you for a second here just tell me what's going on in your life.
Oh, well, thank you. Yeah. As you said, it's definitely been a really interesting and busy, fruitful time. You know, I've been working a lot lately as a peer support specialist. So the last year especially, I find myself actually working with people who are kind of in pre-crisis to help them, you know, avoid, falling into a crisis. And you know, so the work that we're doing is really working to just kind of help uphold and empower people to self-advocate, which has been kind of a neat extension, I guess, of the work that I think we do as poets a lot. You know, so often we tend to start writing from that place of wounding. Or that place of, you know, intense emotional experience. And so, you know, this has been a really interesting outgrowth of that and being able to sort of really take some of the same experiences I talk about in poems and use them as hopefully a shared experience, a lived experience with people who may be going through some of those things today. So it's actually been really very uplifting and really fulfilling.
Well, good. Are you doing that right there in Albuquerque?
Yes. Yeah, I'm working with we've started what's called a warm line. So we have a very small staff of people who all of us have lived through traumas and really, you know, again, multiple experiences in our lives that were traumatic and you know, in some cases involved things like, addiction experiences and those types of things, including myself. And so, you know, we get to work with people and help them to, again, kind of find a way to find a way into their own journey and hopefully some new ways that allows them to really sort of find a path to wellness.
Wonderful. What do you define pre-crisis as? That's interesting.
Well, it's a strange sort of statement, I guess, but, you know, we're talking to people who are often experiencing mental health challenges, substance and alcohol use dependency issues, or may very well be beginning to have those dark thoughts that come from being in a rough place in life, and we tend to try to help them kind of navigate those feelings and experiences and find a way through. We actually partner with the New Mexico Crisis and Access Line, which is a hotline for people who may be feeling, they may be experiencing thoughts of suicide or of harming someone else even. And we, by partnering with them, we kind of try to help people not get to that place.
That's fantastic. That's really fantastic. I love how you call it a warm line instead of a hotline too. Just to, you know, show that difference between the two again as being like one step removed from emergency. But this is the place where you need to talk. Yeah.
Absolutely. And it's wonderful because, you know, so often we talk to people who, I mean, a lot of times it could be something as simple as just somebody who really doesn't have a lot of other people to reach out to, and they just need to connect with another piece, mm-hmm. a person, and experience that kind of human warmth, you know, that moment of connection. And so even in those moments, you know, we just are happy to be there. And it is funny because, you know, as we're doing that, I have begun a process of really incorporating poetry into some of those conversations. Very often I actually find myself giving people who call writing prompts and that sort of thing as a way of sort of processing mm-hmm. some of those feelings. And so we actually have a number of people in the past now who have kind of begun writing or journaling as a part of their wellness plan. And they do it, mm-hmm. you know, under their own direction, of course, but sometimes we're able to just prompt that a little bit. And that's really been actually exciting to see for me because, you know, I'm also really intrigued by the idea of poetry therapy, which mm-hmm. has been in use for over 200 years now as a therapeutic tool. And so getting to kind of do it in this way that is more, a little more organic and a little less clinical, but still sort of achieves that same outcome, I think is really really exciting.
Well, on that note, I was wondering if I could talk you into reading something for us.
Absolutely. I would love to. You know, I think I might actually share this poem on that note. One thing that isn't always talked about is physical trauma. And this poem is a little bit of an older poem, but I actually wrote it based on an experience I had with a young man in my childhood who unfortunately went through a trauma, and this was sort of my way of making amends for him, to him, for not necessarily knowing the best way to respond to his situation as a child. And I just have always felt that I wanted to sort of reach back through the years. So the poem is called Physics of Flowers. Unlike most boys, I never wanted to be a firefighter, because I understand quantum mechanics and the physics of flowers. How easily the flame blossoms on the flesh when it is caught unexpected. How a friend's face was ruined by the flame. Before the accident, his parents said he grew like a weed. But weeds, flowers, and young boys' awkward bodies are all born of heat. Energy exchanged between the sun, the ground, and seed, and he was pink with it. The burden of burning, turning his bones into ash around the elbows, his head was a rose. Face folded in places like petals. Chest, a napalm-colored sweater. Rainwater ran through mazes to escape his flesh. His hands felt like folded socks when I held them. He was my friend. There were flames trapped inside of him. We were 12 and I remember his face before the tablecloth caught fire, before we could no longer run together in class because his legs wouldn't carry him. The physics of flowers and little boys is the same. Energy is not created or destroyed, only changed. He was changed. We were changed. But his skin was never wrong, only covered with scars. According to science, the definition of work is energy exerted over distance. My eyes would not cross the distance between his skin and I, so my eyes did not work. Months later, we stood rooted in place in a grocery store aisle, this flower of fire my friend had become and I. Staring at each other's across his mother's shopping cart, we were motionless. Two children on the edge of a chasm that neither one dared to cross. I never wanted to be a firefighter, but that day he did. Wanted to push the flames back down in his skin and remind me he was human. My friend lifted his arms for a hug. And I swear, in that moment, this flower became a bird. Hairless, feverish, and free. This boy flower bird burning turned to me with a simple science born of reason and said, "Don't feel sorry for me. I'm the same boy you knew 9 months ago. Talk to me like a person, shit. Just talk to me." My friend taught me to face my fears in his because his face was full of them. His skin taught me the physics of flowers. When it is wilted, a flower is bent by the same heat that birthed it, and in learning how to bend, he learned how to fly. So in honor of his wings, I hold pretty poetry in both hands for the wind to have, and wing letters of love to all those who hurt, because pain is fucking ugly. But this burn victim, no, my friend, Bobby, was beautiful. Thank you.
Wow. And you said this is a true story from your real 12-year-old year of life, right?
Yes, yeah. He was, I changed the name of the character, but, you know, for out of respect, of course, but he was a young boy that I was friends with when we were children, and the story is true. And, you know, I watched people react to the physical changes that he suffered and endured, unfortunately, as a result of the fire. And even at that age, I was really sort of dumbfounded by the way that people seemed to almost recoil from him, even though many of them had known him for so long. And I found that at that age, unfortunately, I myself didn't really know quite how to approach him at first. And so I always felt a certain, I guess, shame over that, really. We did eventually, I mean, what I love is that he really, you know, he did. He said to me in a grocery store one day, he just kind of laid it out for me and said, listen, you know, I'm the same kid you knew. There's nothing different. I'm the same exact person. And that just always stuck with me as a really powerful reminder of the fact that no matter what traumas we may endure, no matter how they may affect us and affect certain parts of our journey, ultimately people are just, you know, they're just human beings living their life and doing the best they can. And so I've always tried to kind of carry that with me as a reminder.
Yeah. And it kind of offers us a nice springboard into the fact that you do a whole lot of work with kids, don't you?
I do. I love children. I just love them to death. I mean, I have four of my own.
Mm-hmm.
And I sometimes feel like I've adopted entire communities of them outside of the house. but I adore them. I love kids. I love the energy and the light and the sort of hopefully optimism that they still have. And, you know, having had a lot of rough experiences as a child myself and having made some of those mistakes as well, I really want to try to kind of be a mentor if I can in that way. I just really feel that, you know, as adults, we have not always done the best we can to leave, you know, a good, healthy, stable world for them. And so at the very least, I feel we can do is just try to, work with them, help them to understand and to find ways to kind of express the things that they're going through in their own life. So I do. I feel that's very important.
Mm-hmm. And so do you write with children?
I do, yes. I've mentored a number of young poets on a one-on-one basis. I usually try to take a couple of young writers from the community and sort of mentor with them every year if I can. And really just and I mean, I admit there are times I feel a little silly, you know. I remember the first time I was working with a youth poet, they had approached me. But the second time I actually approached this young writer, and I just really was impressed with what they had to say and, you know, the power of their voice already at such a young age. And, you know, I offered to just kind of work with them. And, you know, I still feel a little silly because there's a certain sense in my mind of like, you know, not wanting to come off, I guess, as somehow being the expert, quote unquote, you know. But I definitely, you know, enjoy taking the experience that I've had doing this for such a long time and just trying to share that.
Well, I would guess that you're doing a good job, especially since you've been recognized as that gold medal teacher by the Scholastic Art and Writing Awards. And that was for your work with young writers. So do you write with your own children?
You know, I do. It's funny you ask. I actually have I'm kind of a big dork when it comes to family, and so I recently just made a calendar of photos of me and my children, you know, for the year. And one of the photos, or one of the pages of the calendar, actually has photos of all my kids reading a poem on the microphone at different parts in their life. Most of them haven't really continued with it, but my youngest son, Chance, we actually do work together, and he has actually surprised all of us by becoming quite the improv poet. He's started around age 9, and so he's been now for about 3 years. We'll go to open mics or something, and he'll get up and he'll improv a poem, which is amazing to me, because I can't even honestly say that I would get up and improv a poem. granted, I don't always know what he's going to say, and there have been a few times that I've sort of had to sit there slack-jawed going, what? but no, it's beautiful to watch, and I love the sort of fire that seems to come alive inside of him when he does it, so it's pretty amazing to watch.
Well, fantastic. I'm really glad that you and Chance and the others have been kind of sharing that within the Glickman family. How wonderful. How very wonderful. And I know, too, that you've kind of taken a brief hiatus from the world of slam, yes?
I have. I adore slam. I think that slam poetry is just an absolutely fantastic world and a beautiful, beautiful tool for especially engaging young writers. And, you know, I've done the national poetry scene and the national poetry slams and individual slams and all of that, regionals, and I love them. I do. But I just recently found myself feeling as if I was performing so often that I wasn't actually writing. Of course, as a writer, that felt off balance to me. So I've been definitely taking some time off to just kind of get back in touch with myself as a writer and work on some of those new projects. And, you know, I find myself looking a little bit more after some time off at the kind of spoken word scene, which I know is always a distinction that kind of eludes some people sometimes. But I really find myself drawn to the idea of spoken word, especially as something that, you know, embraces slam poetry, of course, but also embraces all of those other oral traditions that exist, you know, and some of the freedoms that come with that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's a wonderful thing. Yeah, go ahead.
Thank you. Yeah, we're actually working now. I'm working with a couple of folks from the New Mexico State Poetry Society, and what we're doing is we're actually working on creating a project. We're going to offer a contest annually through the National Federation of State Poetry Societies, if all goes well, that will be a spoken word contest, which is kind of a big change for us. Absolutely, yeah. You know, it's spoken word has not really been a big part of the National Federation of State Poetry Societies. There's been a tendency, I think, among people to think of the Poetry Society as kind of a more academic, you know, old school society.
Yes.
But there's, you know, a lot of folks who want to see that evolve. So it's pretty exciting.
And then there's always that tension from those who don't want it to evolve too. So I'm sure you also feel that in a certain way. But we're about halfway through the show, and I don't want to miss out on giving the audience another chance to hear something that you've written. Would you mind reading again?
Oh, sure. Absolutely. So I think, you know, what I might do, given some of the optimism that we're kind of talking about, is share this poem. It's also a slightly older poem, but one that I have really enjoyed. And this one is kind of for all of the introverts in the world, of which I definitely count myself one. So it's just called A 12-Step Survival Guide for Introverts. 1. Do not be ashamed of your silence. Speak only when necessary, and your voice will carry its own weight. This only makes your voice stronger. 2. Do not let being alone make you lonely. Use the extra time to unwrap your middle name like the last box of dishes from your mother's kitchen. Learn to love the mirror for its gentle insistence that your skin carries light like a postal worker. You are here to deliver something. 3. Treat the word love like a prayer. Speak it only when your soul has been shaken by a spirit so powerful you find yourself on the floor. Do not expect it to save you. Love, like prayer, is an act of faith that makes your body a holy place. So do not surrender your prayers to anyone whose hands are not clean enough to heal. 5. When you do choose to speak, do not whisper like rain. Gather as much of the sky as your lungs can contain. Scream like crickets, like cicadas. Covet the moon. Convince the sky of your claim. 5. The laughter of children is the sound the rain is trying to make. When it stands outside your door waiting to be let in, let it in. Keep the sky company. 6. Remove the callus from your hearts. All that hard flesh left on the meat from walking away a dozen, 100, 1,000 times. Your chest is not filled with feet, so do not crawl on the floor looking for love. Stand up. 7. When your son tells you that old people smell like books, show him the goosebumps. Tell him that this is the power of his words. Teach him to understand conversation as the fine art of carving. Remind yourself of this lesson. Let silence be the tool of your creation. 8. A room with 6 closed doors is not as inviting as a room with 1 that is open. You are not the only one who feels lonely, but your heart is a door, so open it. Keep the world company. 9. Love is not an animal to be chased by drunken moons. It is the water where the moon rests her eyes, the hot breath and wild eyes of something unseen, so do not be startled by its movement in the trees. 10. Never give up on love. Keep coming back to this. Not the person who hurt you, but the idea. Remember that love, like God, is too big to hide forever. 11. You will fear that your last name, your leftover bottles of rainwater, or your love of cicadas have taught the world to see you as strange. But 12, searching the carnival glass of their eyes, we find the strange beautiful. The long halls of their silence filling their throats with the sound they have learned to name prayer. The first to write poems are always the lonely. So when you feel lonely enough to write poems, find your eyes in that mirror and look for a sadness that reminds you of home. And remember, you are here to deliver something. The word you are searching for is hope. Speak up.
Comfort in your life.
You know, that's a good question. It was a combination of things, I think, but you know, really, I find that, I mean, I'm a pretty hardcore introvert by nature, although poetry has sort of semi-cured me of that, I guess.
To me, right? Because you're on stage doing this, as you're saying that you're an introvert. I mean, those two things, marrying them together must be very difficult if you're truly an introvert.
It definitely it is. And it's funny because a lot of people kind of, I think, suspect that I'm lying to them when I tell them that, because I'll go and I'll perform and do a show somewhere, and you know, I'm very high energy and very, very into it. I mean, I love getting to share poetry, and so being up there, I get into it. I really find myself just alive in that moment. And when I come off stage, I think people are often like, "Oh, you're so high energy. How could you be an introvert?" And I'm just like, "Oh, you don't even know. When this show is over, I'm going to go sit in my room and I'm going to just be like." Exactly.
Yeah.
But it's just something about poetry, you know, the ability to just tell stories and to engage, because I feel like poetry for me when I'm doing it, it's you know, it's not just me sharing my ideas or my thoughts or my stories with the audience. I feel it's like a dialogue, you know, it's this sort of two-way communication that happens, you know.
Right. Absolutely. The audience plays such a huge part in spoken words. You're exactly right. And I think that's part of the reason why it's so difficult to define for someone what spoken word poetry is. Because unless you've been in that relationship, right, it's difficult to explain just how electric the connection can be. And I totally
absolutely.
See what you're saying.
Yeah, it's I mean, it's a beautiful thing. It is. And it you know, I say that poetry has sort of cured me, and I'm, you know, I'm sort of half joking, but I'm also sort of telling the truth, because I find that in that moment, I definitely am able to transcend that, right? And I love that. And, you know, the other thing of that is that, you know, after the show, always somebody that wants to come up and talk about one of those poems. And then you actually are engaging in a really just real world dialogue with people about the things you've been talking about, which sometimes are difficult or sometimes may even be, you know, more humorous, but you're still, you know, you're still creating this just amazing connection with people in the world.
Yes.
Off of just sort of opening yourself up.
Yeah, isn't that beautiful? It's a beautiful thing.
Oh, it
thing.
Is. I love it. Mm. Absolutely.
I love the way that you characterize it.
Thank you. I just, you know, I adore the humanity in every single poem. You know, I mean, there's no, you know, there are, I mean, certainly as a writer, there are, you know, writers who I love for their craft. And there are writers who I love and performers for that matter, who I love really just for their sort of rawness at times as well. Mm-hmm. And when you get the two of those things together, especially, it's life changing, I think.
Yeah. Yes. And you're working on a lot of your writing right now. I know that you have several projects going. You want to talk a little about those before we get too far into it? And I can't give you the opportunity to kind of let us know about all the things that are in the works that you're working on.
Oh, absolutely. Thank you. Yeah. Well, I guess most recently, I've just released a new collection of poetry. It's a short chapbook size volume of erotica poetry. You know, it's something that, speaking of being an introvert, I really never thought I would do. I really believe in sex positivity and the idea of open, honest, safe conversation about sexuality, because I think that's where a lot of probably the fears and the phobias and those types of things come from, you know, is the shame and guilt that we sometimes associate with sexuality. And so I actually host a series called Speaking of Sex, where we bring burlesque dancers and erotica poets together to try to create this sort of safe space for those conversations. And so, you know, my new collection is just a short volume of erotica called Shiver Sweats, A Kiss, A Kiss. And it's, you know, it's a sampling of poems that I wanted to put out there, partly just to share them, but also partly because I feel like erotica poetry often gets maligned a bit, because it so often tends to, unfortunately, be sort of thought of as an area where people kind of fall into misogyny and exaggerations of their physical gifts and things like that, you know, and I feel like the point of erotica is sometimes missed altogether. So I really just wanted to kind of put out some poems that I thought were a little more positive overall, and really dealt more with the idea of like subtlety and sensuality. So that's out. And I'm also at the same time working on my new full-length collection, which is going to be called Mud Sweet. And it's just a collection of new work that is really written more in response to some of the kind of newer voices and styles that I see emerging in poetry these days a lot. And I really am intrigued by a lot of writers, you know, like Bob Hickok, Adrian Blevins, Tracy Brimhall, Tony Hoagland. I mean, there's all these just really powerful, wonderful writers out there who have been inspiring me lately. And so I'm kind of writing in response to some of that, to sort of play with some of the newer elements that I feel like they're bringing to poetry. So that's in the works as well. I'm excited. I'm excited about both of those. It's nice to just be writing again and really focusing on, you know, telling stories that I haven't told yet and trying to kind of access parts of my experience that that I haven't delved into so much.
Yeah.
So I find that they're a little bit more optimistic than some of the poems I've written in the past, which is a bit weird, to be honest, for me. You know, when I first got into recovery, I actually found myself having trouble with poetry because I wasn't angry or pissed off anymore.
Right.
And at that time, I really didn't know what to write about.
Right.
So it's been a journey of finding that in the poetry as well now.
Fantastic. Well, I want to give you a chance to read us out of the show today, but not without saying thank you so much for being my guest. I really loved to have this opportunity to speak with you and hear your work, and I'm sure I'm not the only one. So without further ado, Mr. Zachary Kleckman.
Thank you. And I will end with this short poem that I wrote for I was thinking of my son, and he really loves it, so I promised him I would read it. And it's called The Menu. Granny called them skeeters, not skittles, he explains. Sure, they turn red with your blood, but they don't taste like rainbows. Trust me, Dad. The logic of children makes it natural to confuse a thing you eat with a thing that eats you. Anything you can put in your mouth must be good for you. Pennies are a good source of copper, which is where suntans come from. Everyone knows that. And pie is delicious, unless it's the pie they have in mass. That's full of numbers, and numbers are not delicious. Unless it's Christmas and you're counting your presents. But her pies are delicious. If the skeeters try and eat me, guess what? I'm delicious too. Maybe the skeeters are aliens, Dad. If the aliens try and eat me, I'll eat them back. We're all aliens, she says, because they're somewhere we've never been. Wherever Granny is, she's an alien there. There's a big mirror in the sky to show the ocean its reflection. There's so much sky, the people must practice their smiles, and maybe the birds see someone look sad and stop to give them a feather. That's why angels have wings, Dad, so they can tickle the sad people. Don't worry. If any angels see Granny, they'll just make her laugh, and she can tell them all about the skeeters. Dad, I just thought of something. What if the difference between living and dying is what's being eaten by who? Thank you.
Thank you again, Zach McCluckman. This is Susan Dobie Chase, and this is Spoken Heard. Next week, when my guest will be Kathy Petch, and until then, be kind to one another.